Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you joining us on this Monday. So many different stories playing out. We're going to be covering them all. We want to start wishing our best to everyone in Louisiana as Hurricane Ida has worked its way through Louisiana as it is now spreading across the southeast. So many people who are struggling and dealing with the 16th anniversary of Katrina, another major hurricane coming through and slamming into Louisiana. So we know a lot of you, especially all over the state of Louisiana, are listeners, and we are wishing you the best. We know that many of you do not have power. You may be listening to our show in a car, off a generator, in some way. So we appreciate all of you and are wishing you the best. A lot of different stories out there. Afghanistan, theoretically, tomorrow is the official deadline. By the way, we are going to be talking to Donald Trump tomorrow on the official deadline, August 31st, for troops being removed, our departure from Afghanistan after 20 years. That will be perfect that Donald Trump will be joining us in the third hour tomorrow to discuss everything Afghanistan and more. COVID, the madness continues. Alex Berenson, our friend, has been banned from Twitter, as we told you might happen on Friday. We need to get him on this week. We will discuss that. And the big story remains, who is making decisions in the Joe Biden White House? I'm going to play you these cuts. I'll bring in Buck Sexton. We will discuss. You may remember the last time Joe Biden was in the White House addressing everything Afghanistan. He was he finished his speech, went to a sheet of paper, and said he had been told to call on a particular person. Here is that cut from last week.
Ladies and gentlemen, they gave me a list here. The first person I was instructed to call on was Kelly O'Donnell of NBC.
That is last week. Who is this person giving him a list and telling him who to call on? You're the president of the United States. And then yesterday, talking about the hurricane, Biden was told one more time, they told him not to take questions. Listen to this.
I'm not supposed to take any questions, but go ahead.
Mr. President, on Afghanistan.
I'm not going to answer Afghanistan now.
Can you see if there's still an acute risk?
Buck, what is going on here? Who's telling him not to take questions? You're the president. You should be able to decide whether you want to talk to the media or not.
You feel like he's about to run into the basement at any moment, because that was the safe space during the actual campaign for the 2020 election. Joe Biden got to hide out from the press. We all knew that this was a guy that Democrat voters had rejected resoundingly many times over. And so now all of a sudden, in the pandemic year, he becomes an option of normalcy. Oh, he's been around so long. But they never stopped to think whether they should do this, meaning elevate Joe Biden to be the president. It was, could they get it passed enough of the American people with all the election law changes and all the shenanigans, which we can talk about another time. But Clay, I think right now you're seeing that the so-called 3 a.m. phone call with Joe Biden. You know, remember, it's always, oh, who do you want to answer the phone when the United States is under attack, or when there's a moment where the chain of command from a national security perspective really matters? And with Joe Biden, you say, not only are you worried about what his decision's going to be, you worry if he's going to be able to, like, pick up the phone and mumble something coherent or not. It's just the guy's not up for it. We all know it. And we're suffering as a country because of it.
I think we just need to know who is actually directing the Biden White House. Is it his chief of staff? Is it Ron Klain, who is basically the default president of the United States right now? Certainly it's not Kamala Harris, because I don't think anybody trusts her or her entire regime right now. So who is making these decisions? Who's telling Biden, hey, you can't take questions. Hey, here's the list of the order in which you're supposed to. Because, I mean, really think about that. Some people say, well, why is that a big deal? I think it's a pretty monstrous deal that you, as the president of the United States, aren't capable of standing at a rostrum and pointing to someone and on the fly responding. What's happening, I believe, you can tell me if you disagree, Buck, I think what's happening is the press secretary, whoever that is, could be Jen Psaki, could be other people, are talking to the media. They're saying, okay, it's your turn to go first. What are you going to ask him? They are then letting him know, in addition to who he's calling on, what the questions are likely to be. And look, I'm not saying that in the same way that a debate is not a perfect approximation of what kind of president you would be. You can be a great debater and an awful president. You can be not that great on your feet and really good when you have time to decide things. But Buck, it is a sign of mental I don't know if incompetence is the right word, but certainly decline.
Capacity. It's a capacity issue. It's a capability issue.
He clearly has a mental capacity issue, which is not, which is terrifying, should be terrifying to anyone out there who's an American citizen.
Clay, the guy is going to be in his second term if he runs deep into his 80s. I mean, this is to be the president of the United States. This isn't, you know, to run a local family-owned business or something. I know there are people who are, we've had this discussion, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole. There are people that are deep in their 80s, they could do more push-ups than you and me combined, and they're great and they're with it. Joe Biden is not that. Right? The problem
Buffett
is that Joe
is
Biden
is
showing us on a regular basis, he's showing us that he's actually not in a place where he can manage these things. He doesn't have the energy. And when you're talking about these moments that you're highlighting for all of us where he's saying, I'm not supposed to do this. Is he not smart enough to know how that sounds to the American people in a moment of crisis? We have 300, according to the Pentagon's estimates, which I'm talking to people that are arranging some of these evac operations. They say 300 Americans is still a substantially low number, that it's more than that, but they believe there are 300 in and around Kabul. We've got the deadline looming tomorrow. We have no real
questionable, let's be honest, decisions about what's exactly is going on with these drone strikes, which are important decisions to be made. And it's not clear exactly what happened there. What are you hearing about the drone strikes?
Well, here's the big question that all of us from the intel side, and it's amazing to see how many people, Clay, who are, you know, retired intel community, ex-CIA, ex-DIA, ex-Special Operations, Delta Force, you name it, all these people who were in government service in some capacity and have now rallied and are just using their contacts with people that they know and people from within the community, people in country, to try to get Afghans out. And so there's a tremendous amount of behind the scenes effort and communication going on to that end. I mean, first and foremost, to get out our Americans, but also to get out Afghan allies, the SIV holders, interpreters. And the question that's come up among them is, so we are to believe, and I could pose this to everyone listening right now, we are to believe that somehow the Biden administration and the sources that inform it on the national security side didn't know that the Afghan couldn't foresee that the Afghan national security forces were going to collapse in days, and never mind months, in days, but were able to find and have a drone strike, you know, send a Reaper drone into eastern Afghanistan to take out a few bad guys that they has as of yet not named, which a lot of people are pointing to as you take out senior leadership, you say who they are, right? You get the bad guy in the old West, you want to know who was on the poster. You don't just say, oh, we got a bandit. And they're not telling us, they haven't told us yet. But Clay, we're supposed to believe that they could find them that quickly, that the intel that we have is that precise and good at this moment? Hard to buy that. I mean, not impossible, but hard to believe.
Here's what happened. The Taliban had two guys that they wanted to get whacked. And the Taliban, here's what I think happened. The Taliban went to our intelligence forces and they said, hey, these are bad dudes. They were involved in ISIS-K and this attack. Here is their information. Here is where they are. And gave these guys head on a platter to us. We went ahead and did the strike, but I think there's uncertainty as to exactly how involved those guys are. And so I think we just ended up doing the bidding of the Taliban, who they gave us these two guys. This is my theory, because I'm with you. I don't buy that our intelligence apparatus, which has been unable to basically predict anything, is suddenly able this quickly to figure out exactly who was behind this attack and you wipe them out.
Now, there was also the strike on the what they believe was an SVBID, a suicide vehicle-borne improvised explosive device, essentially a big car bomb that they hit with a drone in Kabul on its way to the airport. And look, that's a use of force that's entirely justified. You got to protect the Americans, the service members and Afghans at those gates. There's also been reporting that you had a number of civilians. I mean, a family is saying 10 of its members were killed as a result of likely the secondary explosion from that, because the drone strike itself is pretty precise. But if you hit a car packed full of explosives, the explosives go, right? This isn't like a nuclear bomb where you have to hit a trigger or else it doesn't actually detonate the way that you plan it to. So the secondary explosion looks like it killed a number of Afghan civilians, which is very sad. But we're still in this place, Clay, where over the next 24 hours, two big things. Can we stop the next strike that we know is coming on us? And are we actually going to leave? Are we going to, you know, this is a Biden. I appreciate what Lara Logan said last week. There is no timeline. She's right in concept. And it was a fantastic overview she gave of the whole situation on this show. But if the Biden administration says we're going. I mean, is that really going to happen? Are we in a place where we might leave Americans on the ground? Are they going to say that some of these Americans didn't want to leave? What's their answer going to be? I mean, the next 24 hours is going to be a real test of the whole Biden squad.
And also how much protection, to the extent we're getting any, are the Taliban going to provide for all of those Americans that are theoretically left behind, who reportedly we've given the names of to all the Taliban out there. So they are now aware of exactly who these Americans are. And Buck, other big question here. Once we leave, presuming that we do, are we going to get any sort of consequential punishment or action taken based on the futility of this disastrous departure? Or are people going to pretend as soon as we leave the country as if this didn't happen, and this story, they try to have it disappear almost overnight? That's the other big question that I think is out there.
Oh, I want to get back to how they're going to spin. They're going to spin this, and it's going to be dizzying for people that live in reality. The Biden team is going to have a whole narrative of what's going on here that's different from what we're all observing. But we'll come back to that. Plus, Clay, we've been saying it here later on this hour. Fauci wants your kids to get the shot. I mean, everybody listening, he's going to try to. Well, let's come back to it. But he wants your kids to get the shot. He wants mandates in the schools. But we've said it before, it's worth repeating. If you're not relying on Pure Talk for your cell service right now, you are paying too much. Like $60 a month too much. We're talking close to $800 or more a year. So switch from AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, because that's extra cash in your pocket when you do it. Pure Talk is on the exact same network, using the exact same towers as those big carriers, but for a whole lot less. In fact, Pure Talk saves the average family, as I said, over $800 a year. And here's how, Clay. Those big wireless providers, they charge folks out there for data they'll never need and perks they'll never use. Why? It's not worth it.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense at all. And I told you that my 13-year-old is on this Pure Talk wireless network, and he gets unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data. I love these guys. They were in my house last week. Had a great sit down with them, told them how much they're helping my family. I trust them to take care of my family. You should be trusting them as well to save you money. You can get unlimited talk, text, plus 6 gigs of data, all for just $30 a month. How do you do it? From your cell phone right now, dial #250 and say Pure Talk, and you'll save 50% off your first month. Again, from your cell phone, #250, say Pure Talk, and you'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from Pure Talk. Sign up, get to keep your same number today.
Sergeant Johanny Rosario Pichardo, 25, of Lawrence, Massachusetts, assigned to 5th Marine Expeditionary Brigade, Naval Support Activity, Bahrain. Sergeant Nicole Gee, 23, of Sacramento, California, assigned to Combat Logistics Battalion 24, 24th Marine Expeditionary Unit, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Staff Sergeant Darren Hoover, 31, of Salt Lake City, Utah. Corporal Hunter Lopez, 22, of Indio, California, a rifleman. Corporal Dagan Page, 23, of Omaha, Nebraska, rifleman. Corporal Umberto Sanchez, 22, of Logansport, Indiana, rifleman. Lance Corporal David Espinoza, 20, of Rio Bravo, Texas, rifleman.
Lance Corporal Riley McCollum, 20, of Jackson, Wyoming, a rifleman. Lance Corporal Dylan R. Marola, 20, of Rancho Cucamonga, California, a rifleman. Lance Corporal Kareem Nakui, 20, of Norco, California. Navy Corpsman Maxton Soviak, 22, of Berlin Heights, Ohio, assigned to the 1st Marine Regiment, 1st Marine Division, Camp Pendleton, California. Staff Sergeant Ryan Knoss, 23, of Corryton, Tennessee. Knoss was assigned to the 9th PSYOP Battalion, 8th PSYOP Group, Fort Bragg, North Carolina. These are the names of all of the fallen in Afghanistan. Oftentimes, Buck, as you and I both know, the names of people who do things that are not heroic echo throughout our media ecosystem and receive a massive amount of attention. And we just wanted on this show to give all of those who gave their lives for our country the attention and the respect and the commendation that they deserve. And also Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz, 20, of St. Charles, Missouri. All 13 of those individuals deserve our utmost respect, commendation, not just for themselves, but for their families. And Buck, what stands out to me as we ran through all of those names, just how young all of these guys and girls
are. These are the best of us, these individuals. And they stood at the fence line, they stood outside the wire, and they were protecting our people, and they were protecting those the United States had entrusted with their security and those to whom we had a sacred obligation. And then they pay the ultimate price. And it's just a reminder for all of us, I think, Clay, as we sit here, we talk about the politics, we talk about the administration, and we criticize them, but we don't just do so because we're trying to score points or because this is, you know, Democrat team or Republican team. The decisions that are made by the commander in chief really matter. The lack of planning here and the disaster of the Kabul pullout has mattered. The entirety of the Afghan war and the inability of people at senior command level from the military all the way up to the White House has cost lives, lives of heroes like the ones that we just read off on this list. Those are the stakes underway right now and have been for years.
And not just for them, but for their families. So many of these guys were young. Several of them had, I saw, either young kids themselves or kids on the way. Our heart breaks for you, and we thank you for everything that you have done for us. One man's on a mission to honor the 9/11 fallen men and women and their families. He's Frank Siller from the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. He's walking more than 500 miles through six states in 42 days to remind all of us of the selfless acts of the men and women who helped others without hesitation. He laid a wreath at the Pentagon, started toward Shanksville. Along the route, he's joined by 9/11 families, veterans, first responders, and the foundation's program recipients. Parades planned in several cities, and they are honoring the fallen and the community's local heroes. On the morning of 9/11, he's going to retrace his baby brother Stephen's footsteps 20 years later, walking from the tunnel into downtown Manhattan to where the tower stood. How do you stand up for all these heroes? Help America keep its promise to never forget. Honor your heroes by donating $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T2T.org.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck, and Clay and I are trying to bring you all of the latest and the most up-to-speed, up-to-date information on what's going on in Afghanistan, but also what's going on here at home when it comes to all things COVID. Just some data that I think would be of interest, and you won't hear it or see it in many places. Right now, you have big increases in cases, and the CDC has even called out the states of Hawaii, Oregon, and Washington. Kentucky also on that list, but of course that's a red state. But they've called out a number of blue states, and you won't see much media coverage of this because the narrative has to be that it's those big bad red states that are causing all the COVID. Well, no, it turns out Hawaii, which has been extreme in its approach to COVID for a long time here in terms of mitigation measures, outdoor mask mandates. I think one of the very first places to put an outdoor mandate into place. Oregon now also with Governor Kate Brown has outdoor mandates, Clay, which there is no science to support this. Fauci's too much of a coward to say that. He'll say under some circumstances, it's theoretically possible or maybe even probable if you eliminate probability. You know, he'll say something to justify the idiocy of the Democrats that he ideologically aligns with. But that's just some background because this is going to continue on. You're going to see waves of this hitting across the country. Here you have Fauci, Clay. This is about to be, I think, the big fight now.
Yeah.
Which we've been talking about for a while, which is vaccine mandates for your kids.
I believe that mandating vaccines for children to appear in school is a good idea. And remember, Jake, this is not something new. We have mandates in many places in schools, particularly public schools, that if, in fact, you want a child to come in, we've done this for decades and decades, requiring polio, measles, mumps, rubella, hepatitis. So this would not be something new, requiring vaccinations for children to come to school.
There's so much. I mean, which point of dishonesty, Clay, do you want to eviscerate first?
Well, I'll start this as a parent who has gotten their kids vaccinated for all those things. All of those things are dangerous to children. Like, this is a big deal, right? All of those things, polio really worked a number on kids back in the day. Measles, mumps, rubella, all of those things can kill kids. Listen to the survival rate. If you get COVID, Buck, for people age 0 to 19, I want you to listen to this. The survival rate, if you get COVID, according to a new study that has been done by a couple of top doctors at Stanford, 0 to 19 years old, your survival rate is 99.9973%. That means COVID statistically, you have to go to the third point after zero, after the decimal, in order to find anything for people under the age of 20 in terms of danger. By the way, COVID for 20 to 29 year olds, Buck, 99.986% survival rate. 30 to 39, 99.969 survival rate. 40 to 49, 99.918% survival rate. All these young people are under far greater danger of being murdered, of committing suicide, of dying in a car accident, and of the seasonal flu than they are from COVID. So the idea that you would use this vaccine, which, by the way, Buck, did you see out of Israel? Israel is now saying you're not fully vaccinated until you get a third shot now. So everybody out there who got the first two, you're not fully vaccinated.
Did you see there was a Buck Sexton tweet from about 3 weeks ago, which was there is no such thing as fully vaccinated.
Yeah.
There is only vaccinated until the next booster is required.
That's right.
So this is the reality that we have seen on the record coming for weeks. And I'm trying to get everyone's mindset in the, well, I understand this is, the same thing happened in the early days of COVID where they said, okay, New York will lock down, New Jersey, California, but Texas isn't going to have mask mandate. False. They did have mask, right? That other states aren't going to go this way too. Right now, Clay, you look at what they're pushing for, private sector businesses, many of which are, dependent upon the federal government and know that the regulations the government brings could crush them federally. The private sector mandates coming your way, local mandates from cities coming your way. And now if they can get away with it, schools. And that's where they're really going to force, because once they get everybody to make the decision or be forced to the decision, do you send your kid to school or do you get them the shot? Then they feel like they're going to get essentially mass compliance. And, you know, we have, what's going on right now in Nashville? Are there masks in the schools there or not? You know, even in a red state.
Yeah, so it's interesting. They have now mandated masks for kids older than 11 now in my location. But anybody who wants to get an exemption can fill out a one-page sheet and they sign it. The principals do. So nobody's wearing masks, right? And the governor maintains still that every kid, every parent gets to make the choice for their kid. But I don't think there's any doubt that they are going to continue to try to strangle away all freedom as it pertains to this issue. And again, remember, 5 to 11-year-olds or kids under 11 are not eligible, under 12, I think, right now, are not eligible for the vaccine anywhere. And the idea that you would give a kid a vaccine, which is never ending, Buck, I think this is a good point. The vaccine is never ending, right? Right now, if you have to get a booster every 6 months forever, like, at some point, first of all, the vaccine is going to wane if you have to get a vaccine update every 6 months. But, like, all of this is pure madness, and the madness is not going away. I will say, it seems like there's finally starting to be major pushback in England. Did you see the story out of England where it's like people are just over it?
Well, how, you know, is it possible that, in this country, Clay, I saw England is finally people. Look, I think Europeans, and this hurts me to say this, but I think there are some Europeans that have been more willing to fight for their individual liberty on this stuff. Because remember, for them, I mean, some of these lockdowns have just been onerous beyond anything we've seen here. So that's also a part of it. They've suffered more from that. But they've been willing to take to the streets and get hit with, you know, water cannons. And I mean, there's some really, you haven't seen any of that really in this country over COVID policy. But when people see that, okay, your kids are going to get this shot, the logic of this, and let's all be very clear, the logic of this is as follows. Your kids, how many times, Clay, have your kids gotten the MMR shot? One time, right? Or maybe it's a double shot or something.
You get a booster at some point, but it's not 6 months after you get it, right?
You're done, right? You get it, and then you get the second, and then you're done. I mean, I haven't gotten an MMR shot in, you know, however many decades at this point, because I'm getting old. But you look at the situation of what's going to happen in the schools now, you're going to have to get every year your kids, and there's going to be variants, and there's going to be evasive, you know, evasive strains, and the vaccine's not, they don't know. Injecting kids with an mRNA vaccine multiple times year in and year, and they'll say right now, oh no, we don't think you'll have to do that. Bull crap. They're lying to you. They do think they're going to have to do that. The same way that there are people walking around New York City now outside with masks on, even though it's frankly insane. They're still doing
it. Before he sat with 30 seconds of silence with the Israeli prime minister and appears like he may have almost fallen asleep. Super weird interaction between Biden and the Israeli prime minister, if you haven't already seen it. But Biden even said that the boosters were going to happen sooner. And then they tried to walk it back. But when exactly they're going to require you to get this booster, it's coming very soon, way sooner, I think, than anybody expects.
And we also, there's the possibility, Clay, of a variant. We all know this is where it really largely evades that. Fauci's already said this. So this is not some conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do then?
Delta evades to a large extent, it appears.
Well, it fades at a minimum, but I mean evades, you know, look at the flu. Do we think if we could have a 95% effective vaccine against the flu, I'm sure everybody would want it. We don't have that ability. That's why we're at 50 or 60% year in and year out. And that's assuming they don't miss it by even more than that. I'm fired up. I want to know what parents are going to do. I'm curious. Can we ask? Let's put that out there. 800-282-2882.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
My kids are not getting the vaccine. And it's not because I'm anti-vax, because somebody's going to grab that quote and they're going to be like, oh, Clay Travis is anti. My kids got all the vaccines from things that are actually dangerous to them. My wife and I have already had COVID. We haven't gotten an antibody test of our kids. I would bet that if we both had it, they probably got it too. And we know natural immunity is a better protector.
Homeschool? You'd homeschool them?
No, I don't think they're going to require it in our schools. The governor has said that that he's not going to require a COVID vaccine.
Let's hope he holds the line on that one, because I'm worried the federal government is going to go after DOE funding the same way that they've made all the private airlines be their little enforcers. They want to try to do this with the school. So we'll see. But let's come back into it in a second, because Clay, Tommy John are the creators of the best underwear on the market, and they are proudly carrying American innovation forward with Apollo, their newest and most advanced men's underwear yet. Constructed with an exclusive performance-grade dry-release fabric blend, this is the future of underwear innovation. Apollo is super soft and comfortable. Clay, I love mine. It keeps you up to 7 degrees cooler, And it's much better than the old cotton skivvies that you got that can get all bunched up and stuff. It's really hard to have a good day if your underwear doesn't fit right. That's why you got to go with Tommy John.
Yeah, look, that's why they've also sold 15 million pairs all the way up to 4XL. So they have the right size no matter what size you are. Every pair has best pair you'll ever wear or it's free guarantee. And I'm telling you, Apollo is going to become your new favorite underwear. You can get them online, not in stores, at this website right now, TommyJohn.com/Clay and Buck. A lot of women out there. Also, they have great women's apparel, but how often have you looked around at your man? He wears his underwear probably too long. Why not get some brand new for him? TommyJohn.com/Clay and Buck. 20% off your first order right now. One more time, TommyJohn.com/Clay and Buck. See site for detail. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We're going to take some of your calls here. Buck pointing out that Fauci is arguing for your kids to be mandated on the vaccine in order to go to school. And I just want to keep sharing the actual data here since Buck and I were talking about this during the break. It's amazing how many people still don't know this. If your kid is under the age of 20 and gets COVID, the survival rate for that is 99.9973%. And by the way, natural immunity, all of the data that continues to roll out, far more protective. So in many ways, your kid getting COVID and surviving as 99.9973% of all people under the age of 20 do is more protective than getting the vaccine in the first place. We got a lot of people who want to weigh in. Sarah in California, what are your thoughts on this as it pertains to mandatory vaccinations for children?
I have four children. All four of them, including my husband and myself, have all had COVID. They all survived. They did not have any side effects. They have all of their vaccines that were needed, required for school. This vaccine, I think, is a choice. I believe if you have, as you have your children, you make a choice whether you're going to vaccinate them or not. You have total control over your children and their medical history, the medical records, their medical decisions. That's why I'm their parent. I don't believe that's the government's decision as to what should be happening with my children.
Sarah, we totally agree with you. I just want to know if the state of California mandates COVID vaccines for kids to go to school and say it's just like the MMR vaccines that are mandated, what are you going to do?
Homeschool until I can find private school.
Wow. There we go. Not going to budge on it.
I think this is also significant, Sarah, because you're like me. I want to make this clear. Your kids all got like measles, mumps, rubella. Like, you're not anti-vaccine. Your kids are vaccinated for purposes of those illnesses that could be dangerous to them. Your kids have already had COVID, and you don't believe that the vaccine is protecting them from any danger.
Absolutely. And if I give them a vaccine, this is an mRNA. It's going to change their biological, physiological body. If they've already had COVID, they get this vaccine, how much is it actually going to change their natural immunity now? Nobody giving any facts. There's nobody giving any research on this. And I believe I have children that are all athletes. If they get this vaccine, government says you need to vaccinate these children. This government is not going to take care of my children if they've got the water around their lungs or around their heart, or they have any other adverse effects. Who's the one that's going to be taking care of these children for the rest of their life? Me, the mom, struggling to watch them not be able to play their sports anymore because they physically can't, because they've had an adverse effect. These children are minority children to begin with. I've adopted all four children. They are mixed children. They are minorities, and they need their sports to get into college. I want these kids to be successful. I'm fighting for my children to be healthy by not giving them the vaccine.
Sarah, we stand call. With you on this principle, and we thank you for calling in. Trey in North Carolina. What's going on, Trey?
Hey, Clay and Buck. First off, you guys are doing a phenomenal job.
Thank you, sir.
Real quick to the point, I have a fourth grader and a second grader, and we're already dealing with mask issues, so if they force the mRNA vaccination on our children, we're going to homeschool. We've been talking to some friends that use a Liberty University program, and I'm not 100% acclimated to what that is fully yet, but my wife and I are going to pull the trigger and take our kids out of public school and homeschool home.
I can understand it. I mean, I think it's a choice that you're definitely going to have to make in a lot of blue states in the next 90 days, Clay. I see it coming. I don't know if North Carolina, I know North Carolina is close. It's, you know, a little bit red, but barely.
It depends on the school district. There. Here's the thing, Buck. I think the point that is needs to be hammered home, and we need to keep hammering it because we're one of the few places out there that will actually be honest 100% with our audience. The idea that natural immunity isn't a monstrous part of our conversation as it pertains to COVID is maybe the biggest failure of the discussion in general
right
now.
It's an intentional dishonesty because it undermines the very foundations of the Fauciite regime, which are based on shut up, peasant, do what we tell you, make your kids do what we tell you, or else we have the answers. Don't look into this other area where clearly we don't have the answers because you don't need any answers because this is natural immunity. It comes from dealing with the virus as it is.
The strongest immunity based on all the data coming out of Israel.
Well, one thing I've been saying from the very beginning, when we all look at this, Clay, at the end of the day, we're going to find out that we did all the distancing, all the masking, all the things. And from an epidemiological perspective, the country basically just got the virus, and as many people got the virus as would have had we just said, good luck, wash your hands, stay away from people when they're sick.
Slower, too.
Slower probably. And more drawn out and suffer all the consequences as a result. That's what I think will be the retrospective. We can talk more about our friend Alex Berenson kicked off a Twitter.
We need to talk about this.
Plus updates, Clay, on where we are in Afghanistan. What else you got?
I think we need to dive into what's going on, obviously, in Louisiana. Make sure that everything is taking place there and that everybody's going to be taken care of. And we also need to talk about our guy, Donald Trump, who is going to be joining us tomorrow in the third hour of the program. All that still headed your way. Thanks for hanging with us.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.